well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be talking with our friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio here in just a moment or two about several bills that have been introduced in Hawaii. We've seen a number of terrible bills introduced in Hawaii. I think in response to the upcoming decision of Wolford versus Lopez, I think the Hawaii legislature, at least the anti-gun lawmakers, of which there are many in the Hawaii legislature, I think they know what's coming with Wolford versus Lopez. I think they know that their vampire rule is going to be struck down or maybe staked through the heart. And they are already pitching a fit. They are throwing their tantrum and they are directing their anger at Hawaii gun owners and those who might want to be gun owners in the future. So without any further ado, let's delve into the insanity with Armed American Radio's Mark Walters. Take a look and a listen. Mark, good Monday to you, sir. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. Thanks for being on my show last night. Always fun. Great to be with you today, Cam.
It is always fun. I always appreciate the invite. So we're not going to talk about Virginia today. We're not going to talk about Minneapolis today.
Good.
Yeah, we're going to talk about something that's going on way out west. You know, the Supreme Court, you and I have talked about this before. I think it's a given that they're going to strike down Hawaii's vampire rule, the default rule barring concealed carry on all private property. And the anti-gun lawmakers in Hawaii, man, I don't think they're taking this well at all. I think they're lashing out. So the Hawaii Senate Committee on Public Safety and Military Affairs is meeting this afternoon. They've got a number of bills, but they've got three gun control bills that, honestly, Mark, at least two of these, I've never seen this before. And, you know, covering the Second Amendment for 20 years, I mean, I kind of thought I'd seen everything that the gun control advocates could throw at us. But, actually, I take it back. The first bill I have seen before, because it's similar to a bill in Illinois called the Responsibility in Firearms Legislation Act, the Rifle Act. I hate those cutesy titles.
Oh, I know.
This one should be called the Gunmaker Extortion Act because Senate Bill 2720, like Illinois, requires any gun company that wants to sell its products in the state to pony up cash in Hawaii. It's called the Firearm Injury Restitution Fund. And once you pay your money into the Firearm Injury Restitution Fund, you will be given a valid firearm injury cost recovery license, which will allow you to sell guns in the state of Hawaii. And if you don't, follow through, if you don't agree to this extortion, you're shut out of the Hawaii gun market. And same in Illinois.
Well, first off, you hit the nail on the head. You know, I've been doing this a long time like you. You and I have done this together for a long time. And just when you think the gun grabbers can't go any lower, they go lower. And it is really, truly remarkable. And I'll never forget having our great friend Alan Gottlieb on Armed American Radio. That's probably been a couple years now. You know how time flies. When we were talking about that very topic, not specifically Hawaii, of course, mm-hmm. but just how they just get lower and lower and lower when you think they can't go any deeper, they do. And he said, look, I got to hand it to them. Their creativity is off the charts. They're creative in ways that we've never seen. And we have to do what? We have to stay ahead of their creativity. And I'm like you with these acronyms. I don't know where they come up with this Rifle Act. I don't know who makes this stuff up, but it always seems to work, right? Do they come up with that first and then say, oh, look, it spells rifle? Or do they say, let's make something fit the word rifle? I don't know. In a case like this, I was writing notes because I'm not familiar with the bill. You said it was SB 2720. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised? I mean, that's my question to you. I'm not surprised personally that they concoct these ideas. I'll start there.
I mean, I'm not ever surprised by what the gun control lobby does and what these anti-gun politicians do. As Alan said, they're pretty creative about this.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I can't even say I'm surprised that they're lashing out. And I think this is a response to the upcoming decision in Wolford versus Lopez, right? It's surprising to me, though, that if there is a surprise, it's that they're being so blatant about this, right? Yeah. I mean, you look at any other industry and nobody's targeted like that, right? Alcohol companies don't have to pay into the you know, alcohol, victims of alcohol or alcoholism recovery fund, you know, where they'll pay for, you know, drug and alcohol treatment, or they'll pay for the cost of somebody whose, you know, liver is failing. Car companies don't have to pay into the, you know, traffic fatality restitution fund, right? It's the gun industry that's being singled out here. And I suspect that makes it uniquely, not just a unique law, if it's signed in the law, but it makes it really easy to challenge, right? I mean, this is pretty clearly a gun control law that has no basis in the tradition of gun ownership or gun regulation. And I, you know, I think it's pretty clearly designed to limit the availability of firearms and to therefore chill the exercise of a fundamental civil right. So, you know, if there's a surprise there, it's that they'd be so stupid as to file a bill and you know, this may very well become a bad law that I think is going to be easily struck down in court.
Okay, but easily struck down costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Here's my copy of the Constitution. I have it in front of me. I read it every day. It sits right here in my drawer in the Armed American Radio studios. And I would highly recommend everybody get a copy of this. These little pocket copies are fantastic. You can find them about anywhere. This one actually came from TPUSA. Hawaii is about ready to get smacked in the head in the Wolford Lopez case with a rolled up copy of the Constitution. And when they do get hit with it, I hope it hurts and I hope it stings. And they do know it's coming. And again, I'm taking notes here. No, you said lashing out. They are in fact lashing out. Okay. But we have to put this in context of a post-Bruin environment. And you just mentioned it will be easily struck down. It will be in a few years at great expense to the taxpayers of Hawaii. Now I'm going to do your listeners a favor and I'm going to read what's tattooed on the inside of my arm right here. And it says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It does not say shall not be infringed as long as you adapt our Hawaii laws. Okay? It says shall not be infringed. And I don't like to just harp on the shall not be infringed, those four words, because it's the entire context of the Second Amendment. What they're doing is they know they're going to lose the Wolford Lopez case, and they are pushing the boundaries of Bruin. And that's where their creativity comes from. How can we skirt Bruin as we move down the road? And then when you get to the courts, they don't care. They know what they're writing now. And by the way, if you live in Hawaii and you're watching this, and many of you do, it will pass and it will be signed. It's that simple. It's no different than Virginia. I don't want to harp on Virginia, but it's true. When you have supermajorities and the Democrats control everything, this is what they're going to do. We've seen this playbook and read this book and seen this movie countless times. And frankly, it's why we have jobs. So I thank them for providing us content every single day. But the fact of the matter is they don't care about this. They never have. If they did, here's what they would have sat in committee and discussed while they're debating the bill. Well, how are we going to handle this in a post-Bruin environment? Okay. This does not fit the Bruin context of the tradition and historical analogs of this country's firearm law since its founding. And they know that. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes these people evil. They do know that. They don't care. They're not good stewards with their taxpayers' money. They don't give a crap how much money it's going to cost them and how much time it's going to take. It doesn't matter to them, Cam. And that, in my book, makes them evil, because all of them should have a copy of this, and they don't.
We're going to get to a waste of taxpayer dollars here. There's another bill that. The second bill that is going to be heard today in this Senate committee is SB 433. Back in 2024, so it's not even been 2 years, Mark. You might remember this. Hawaii passed a law that said, okay, fine, you can open carry butterfly knives and switchblade bladed arms, basically, because they were being sued. Alan Beck brought this lawsuit and they were going to lose. And so they just kind of preempted this. It's fine. You can open carry, but you can't concealed carry.
He thanks.
Well, now they've gone back, and in SB 433, if this becomes law, it would reimpose the ban on open carrying of all of these arms. And as a Firearms Policy Coalition's Robert Mano explains it, if after you're arrested and charged, you could mount an affirmative defense that the bladed weapon that you carried is currently in common use in this country for lawful self-defense purposes. Mm-hmm. So, not only are they going back on what they did 2 years ago, but they're flipping the Bruin test on its head. I mean, again, you talk about ignoring Bruin. Bruin says it's up to the government, not up to you, the gun owner. It's up to the government to show that this regulation fits within the national tradition of the Second Amendment. I'd say, you know, not just gun ownership, because again, we're talking about knives here. In this case, they're saying, no, it's illegal unless you're carrying for self-defense. But Mark, also, the Supreme Court said that self-defense may be at the core of the Second Amendment, but it protects other lawful purposes, right? So what happens if you're, you know, an electrician, you're a contractor, you've got a utility knife in a sheath on your belt, you're open carrying, right? You get arrested, you say it's for work, that doesn't matter, because that's not an exception, right? It's self-defense only.
That's where the affirmative defense part comes in. And let's talk briefly about what that is so people understand. An affirmative defense, folks, you know that you're innocent until proven guilty. Supposedly, an affirmative defense says you're charged because we think you're guilty. You have to prove to us otherwise. That's the non-legal ease deal of an affirmative defense. And that flips our rights on upside down on its head as well. And again, will you win that? You likely will, after great expense and having your lives wrecked in the process, because you've been adjudicated guilty by the mere charge because of a law that they've now flipped on its head, again, to use that term, and rewrote because they did, you know, look, when you look at all of this in context, you can only draw one conclusion, okay? In their minds, the people do not have a right to keep and bear arms. Remember, we're talking about people who think completely different than we do, all right? They want to support, if you go back to Wilford Lopez, King Kamehameha in 1833, these are Hawaii's traditions. Well, Hawaii, you're a U.S. state. And that brings me right back to this. Everything went out the window in 1959. The statehood process began in the mid-40s. You've been a U.S. state officially since 1959. This matters now, but not to the Democrats in control. And there's a bigger picture in play here, not to stay, you know, but to just kind of branch out from what we're talking about. This is the way every Democrat thinks in every blue state behind the blue wall, including the state that you live in now. They're going to push these boundaries. They're going to test these boundaries. And who's the victim? Not a criminal.
Right.
The law-abiding citizen becomes the victim of the laws that they write, not a criminal, because no criminal is going to carry, a criminal is going to carry whatever they want, wherever they want, whenever they want, no matter what this says, no matter what the permitting laws say, no matter what SB 433 says, no matter what SB 2720 says, they just simply don't care. And again, there's a commonality here when you look at every single Democrat in every state that does this, and they all do. You go all the way from Hochul to Pritzker to California, you go to Washington, you go to Oregon, you can go to Hawaii, anywhere blue. And guys, they're all taking this out of the same playbook. These people are working together. And to me, again, I go back to this is an evil ideology that puts the onus on you, the law-abiding citizen. In the meantime, what makes it even worse, it's under the color of safety.
Yeah.
The people's safety. And it's all a big flat lie.
Yeah. Well, you know, and going back to what you said about the culture, right? Because that was one of the big arguments that was raised in Wolford versus Lopez is that, well, Hawaii's never had a culture of gun ownership. And again, you point to the Constitution. Well, you've got the right to keep and bear arms. So what Hawaii is doing right now is trying to stop the formation of a culture of responsible gun ownership. They are trying to retard that development. Which brings us to the last bill, gun control bill, is going to be heard today. This one, I mean, it seems almost harmless compared to the other two. This is SB 2503. It appropriates monies from the state's general fund of law enforcement for buyback programs. Every county would have to have at least two confiscation events every year, funded by taxpayer dollars. You know, I mean, Mark, you and I have gone over the, you know, just the ridiculous nature of these buyback programs. There's no evidence they reduce crime, suicide, accident involving firearms. You know, to some small degree, they might reduce legal gun ownership. I think that's what this is all about.
Of course it is.
It's just another way to, again, to stifle the formation or the continued development of a culture of lawful gun ownership in the state of Hawaii. In this case, you know, basically bribing people, hand over your guns, we'll give you $200 in, you know, gift cards. And by the way, since, you know, we got this Gun Industry Extortion Act, yeah, there aren't any more guns available for sale in Hawaii. So you might as well give us your guns anyway.
Well, what comes next, ladies and gentlemen, sadly, is depending on how these laws shape up. And again, I hate to say this, but these laws will pass out of committee. They'll go to a vote in Hawaii, and the governor will sign these laws. It's sad. Now, I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Maybe there's some holdouts. But we've seen this playbook before. I don't think so. You know, when you look at all three of these in context, SB 2503, SB 433, and SB 27 that we're talking about here. And I'm glad you brought these up because I was unfamiliar with these. These are being heard today, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is step number one in the process, in the legislative process. They're in the midst of their legislative session. These are likely going to pass. But if you know, you mentioned the word anticipation. Let's go back to 433 for a second, kind of try these together. Why would they be going back after knives? Well, maybe if they win the case, more people will be anticipated to carry knives if they win another case. This is a multi-pronged affront. Now, you take a look at Great Britain, for example. Well, can't carry a gun, more people carry knives. So they see more knife attacks in Great Britain. Maybe this is an anticipation of what they think might happen. They're just covering their bases is what they're doing with this, mm-hmm. no matter what. And they're going to be more of these, ladies and gentlemen. It's in their DNA. It's written into their DNA. They can't help it. It is pure infringement on every single count. It's sad, Cam. It's really, truly sad that a major U.S. party in this country, the Democrat Party in this particular case, the party of slavery, the party of Jim Crow laws, the party of gun control, the party of disarming blacks that claims none of their past history, by the way, does this to their citizens, knowing it's a violation of the U.S. Constitution. I think that's the bigger picture here. That what we're talking about is the micro on individual bills. The macro here on whole is look at what they do in total to destroy their citizens' rights. And they do it under the color of it's all for public safety. Name me one single gun control law. One that will stop a criminal. There is none. It's a checkmate. Okay. So again, the worst part about all of this, without seeing the bills in front of me or having read them yet, and I will after this, is that they know what they're doing. They're doing it intentionally, and they're doing it to completely disenfranchise their citizens because they don't like American culture in Hawaii post 1959, post this. And well, guess what? Too bad for them. We'll fight it. And here's where they lose. We will fight it. We will spend the money and we will win. And it's a bigger step for us because they're in the Ninth Circuit. So right. We have to go through the whole Ninth Circus deal where we know we might win it depending on one or two judge panel. They go in bonk and then we lose it and then we appeal. It goes. And this fight takes years and costs millions, but eventually we will win it. And this is why everybody has to take this away. This is why the Supreme Court waited for 2 to 3 years, I believe, Cam, to begin hearing some of these cases that are now coming up in front of them, to see how the lower courts were going to react to their Bruin decision. And I think when Hawaii gets smacked in the face with Wolford v. Lopez, unfortunately, by the time that decision comes out, you correct me if I'm wrong, the legislative session in Hawaii will be over and these three bills will likely have been passed.
I think that's right. Yeah, I haven't seen specifically when the legislative session's over in Hawaii, but yeah, typically it's late May, it's early June, right. And the sessions expire.
Which is about the time we'll start to see these decisions come out from the Supreme Court midsummer, sometime generally speaking around June. And the court has been pretty consistent with its Second Amendment cases being released about June. Usually the last two decisions that come out our gun rights cases. Now, I don't know that Wolford Lopez rises to, what the Supreme Court, that might be a little bit earlier decision than we saw in something like Bruin or Heller or McDonald. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it's likely going to be later. And Hawaii's term will already now. Now, what happens then? Okay. This is when groups like the Second Amendment Foundation, Firearms Policy Coalition, Gun Owners of America, National Rifle Association, Hawaii gun groups get involved and sue immediately. And it does quicken the process. And generally what happens in that case is the politicians begin to walk things back a little bit. But the law is already on the books, guys. Okay.
Right.
You're already screwed. It's just a matter of timing, I think, in these. It's I'd like to say it surprises me, but it doesn't.
You know, again, the only real surprise to me is the creativity on display and, I guess the willingness to take a beating in court eventually shouldn't be a surprise. And, again, I mean, no matter where you live, I think Mark's absolutely right here. Take it from me as a Virginian, right? This is full speed ahead. When Democrats get this power, They are not moderating their position. They are not, you know, running to the middle, right? They are going full speed ahead as quickly as they can, because they know that political power is fleeting. One day Republicans will be in charge again, and this is their moment in the sun, right? So they're going to take full advantage of it. Pay attention to what's going on. Be involved. Be motivated. You know, we had the special election in Texas over the weekend, Mark. The R plus 17 district, Trump won it by 17 points. Democrat won by, I think, 13 or 14 points. You know, we have got to be aware of what's going on. We have got to be engaged and involved in this election cycle.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if we have another election across the nation, like what happened in Virginia, like what happened in Texas, tell you what, there are going to be a lot of safe red seats in a lot of safe red states that aren't so safe anymore.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Texas 17. The woman who lost that race, Lee Wamsgans, is a very, very close friend of mine. She's an executive in the marketing department with Patriot Mobile. And I was thrilled for her when she announced that she was going to make this run. And what's there's a lot in play here. There's a lot of fluidity. There's a lot of dynamics in play here. As you mentioned, Trump won that district by 17 points. And this election wasn't close.
No.
The Democrat won this special election by 14 points. In a district, Trump won by 17. Do the math and see the swing here. So you have to ask yourself why. I think there's a couple issues in play here that this is what we need to be paying very careful attention to. One, Virginia. Two, what we just saw in the special election in Texas. There's a lot of parallels here, okay? TDS sufferers are coming out in droves because of Trump hatred. Trump hatred is going to drive Democrats to the polls in the midterms. We've got midterms coming up in a matter of months. It's going to be here in the blink of an eye, all right? There's a very real risk. The House is definitely in play. I believe what Neil McCabe, my political analyst from Real America's Voice, told me last night. I believe we pick up seats in the Senate. I could be wrong about that, but I tend to think that might happen just because of the makeup of the election cycle and where those seats are being contested. The House, on the other hand, is in play. So that begs the question, when we see what developed in Virginia, what was it, an 18-point swing in the House? We saw Lee, who was a stellar Republican candidate with Trump's endorsement.
And with a 10-point Senate advantage.
Yes, handily lose this seat. Guys, that's a warning. That's a shot across the bow that the other side is, in fact, energized. We don't want to believe that, but we have to accept that fact. So we know this. We see this coming into the midterms. What can we do about it now? You know, I never thought I would say this, but I'm actually seriously considering supporting Trump in his efforts to nuke the filibuster at this point so that we can codify his legislation right now in law, moving away from executive order. And here's why I say that. We know the Democrats are going to do it if they ever regain power in the Senate. That's the first thing they're going to do. They've made it clear. Now, I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but I'm beginning to lean towards that at this point. If we lose the midterms and have not codified these things in law, it's just executive action that a future Democrat president can wipe out with the stroke of a pen. And there goes the entire MAGA agenda out the window just like that.
All right. That's going to be the topic for our next conversation, because I disagree with you. So it'll be a lot of debate.
It is interesting to talk about. There's no question about it. I'm looking at that, and I'm beginning to lean that way. And I never thought I would say that, Cam.
Well, that is I'm still leaning the other way. So next time we have you on, maybe next Monday, if there's not more terrible bills to talk about, maybe we can delve into that debate. But in the meantime, be sure to check out Mark's Daily Defense. Obviously, the Sunday Monster Cast as well. ArmedAmericanRadio.com. That's the website, correct?
That's it. Pick.com or .org. We got them both covered for you.
All right, man. Well, go pick up your six string and play some tunes while it's right behind you.
It's behind me over there, yeah.
And as always, man, really appreciate you joining us on the program. Love your insight. Love you. And look forward to this again very soon.
Likewise. Ditto, brother. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Mark. My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program, and looking forward to maybe having a debate over nuking the filibuster preemptively. I'm not going to get in my opposition now, but I do think that would be a bad idea at this point in time. But who knows? Maybe we'll have that debate next week. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. And, you know, I told myself I'm not going to check CWBChicago.com today, because it's so easy to find recidivist reports in Chicago. It's almost like cheating. I could do a Chicago story every day in this segment. And so I told myself, nope, you're not going to do it. And then one of the first stories I ran across, not from CWB Chicago, from I think it's Fox 32 in Chicago, and I had to talk about it. Suspect with lengthy criminal history charged in Chicago Transit Authority sexual assault, according to police. This is the gun-free Chicago Transit Authority. Schoenthal versus Raul. Going to be debated in conference by the Supreme Court here in a matter of weeks. And, you know, I hope, I'm not particularly optimistic, but I hope that the Supreme Court grants cert to this case. It is, to me, it is such a violation of our right to keep and bear arms to ban the lawful carrying of concealed firearms on public transportation. This is public transportation. In my mind, no different than a public sidewalk. And if you're telling people who depend on public transit to get around that they can't carry while they're on board a subway or a bus, or they're standing at a bus stop, or they're in a train station, you aren't just telling them you can't carry in those locations. You're telling those people you can't carry at all, because you can't carry on your way to those places. You can't carry after you get off of the bus or off of the train when you get to your destination. You're essentially deprived of your ability to bear arms throughout the entirety of your day simply because you don't have a private vehicle. And I know that public transportation was not really a thing in 1791. It is very much a thing today. And I just don't think that the founders would have gone along with any sort of law or prohibition on the right to carry that, again, excluded a large part of the people from exercising this fundamental right. Particularly, again, because these aren't crime-free locations. You know, there is no shortage of violent crime on the gun-free CTA property. Not all of it involving the use of a firearm, although we've seen that too. But plenty of reasons why people would want to carry a firearm for self-defense. In this case, January 27th, 29-year-old woman attacked and sexually assaulted in a CTA elevator at the Jackson Red Line station. Surveillance video, they got a lot of cameras on CTA property, and surveillance video helped to identify the suspect, Curtis Porter, who, according to Fox, was arrested the next day after a CTA supervisor recognized him at another station. Porter, according to Fox 32 in Chicago, now faces felony charges. He also has a lengthy criminal history with at least 15 prior charges. 15. As of right now, he is charged with one felony count of criminal sexual abuse by force, one felony count of aggravated battery against a transit passenger. But through 2014, through January 25th, again, 15 other charges, battery, trespassing, theft, not a lot of time spent behind bars, but a lot of time spent committing crimes. And again, in this case, Porter's not accused of having a gun, but he didn't need to. He overpowered this woman. And she couldn't have a gun. At least not legally, because the state of Illinois and the Chicago Transit Authority say that this is a sensitive place where guns aren't allowed. Crime's not allowed either, but again, not stopping the violent criminals. On today's Armed Citizen story from Wichita, Kansas, where a homeowner shot an intruder inside his home. This was over the weekend. According to Wichita police, this was a burglar, a 40-year-old man who was shot in the leg, taken to a hospital at last report in a serious but stable condition. Police say he'll be taken to jail after he's released. It was just before 5 a.m. on Friday when police were called out to this home. 56-year-old man inside the residence shot the intruder. Police say the investigation determined the 40-year-old man was burglarizing the home. Confrontation occurred inside the residence. A shot was fired by the homeowner, striking the suspect in the leg. And again, the homeowner not facing any charges, but the intruder most certainly is. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A DoorDash driver in Ohio who helped a woman he found lying in the snow, excuse me, while making deliveries. I don't know what things are like in Ohio right now in terms of, you know, the precipitation on the ground, but Central Virginia, it is a sheet of ice. Like, I couldn't get out of my driveway until last Thursday, and even now, I mean, if I didn't have four-wheel drive, I'd still be stuck. But just the ground itself has probably at this point about an inch and a half worth of ice over the snow. I saw a video from Charlottesville over the weekend, which is about an hour north of me. Somebody's skating on a baseball field, just ice skating. And it feels like I'm ice skating every time I try to walk the dogs. It is, I never thought walking a dog would be a terrifying experience, but I feel like I'm at risk every time I take my Bernese Mountain Dog Bentley out, because he loves it. Oh, he loves it. He wants to run and play, and man, I'm just afraid I'm going to like fall on my keister or fall on my noggin, and it is, yeah, it's not good. So I don't know what it's like in Ohio, but it's not good there either. DoorDash driver helping an older woman who fell, according to WXIX, likely because of snow and ice while she was getting her mail. Shannon Lemming is a DoorDash driver. He's been doing it for about 3 years. Says he's seen a lot of stuff, but it was last Wednesday when he saw this for the first time. He was making a delivery. Had just handed off the food. Gets back in his car. Sees someone lying there in the snow. As he got closer, realized it was a woman who had fallen while she was trying to get her mail. And he said he knew that he needed to help immediately. He says, I went to assist her. Another car pulled up, which happened to be another lady. She jumped out. We both assisted the lady, got her up out of the snow. Woman was grateful for the help. She said, it's hard saying how long she would have been there. She says, I'm her hero, according to Lemming. He's not sure how the woman fell, but he thinks probably, again, just slipped on the ice around the mailbox. He says it appears like the snow was too deep to walk, that she had lost her balance. Also said it makes him worried for other older residents who don't have people looking after him. He said, you know, I helped maybe save a life. You never know. I mean, I'll come by. She could have gone into some kind of medical emergency. And he says that he'd like this to just be a reminder to check in on neighbors, see how you can help. He says, be on the lookout for elderly people. If you go by, you see it looks like their car is stranded, stop and help them. See them going outside, looks like there's ice on the ground. Maybe just stop by, yell out the window, see if you can be of any kind of assistance to them, which is great advice. And, you know, I think, again, comes from a good place. So Shannon Lemning there in Clermont County, Ohio, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing for a stranger in need. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com today, though. We are keeping you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including a write-up on these Hawaii bills that I was talking with Mark about. John Petrolino has a new story on some of the, I won't say the pushback, maybe some of the public relations efforts underway at the NRA Foundation in light of the National Rifle Association's lawsuit against the NRA Foundation. Tom Knighton, full complement of stories. Kerry Sloan with a report on a Georgia bill. It's terrible news for gun owners and a sign of things to come if Georgia goes blue. So we've got those stories and more waiting for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. All kinds of great benefits, no matter which tier of support you choose, and no matter which tier you do, you'll be supporting the independent pro segment of journalism we're doing at BearingArms.com. Also tomorrow, don't forget, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, a live stream of Washington Gun Law. William Kirk and I are going to be sitting down talking about the Virginia bills. Looking forward to that. I don't do a lot of live streams. I certainly don't do a lot in the evening hours, but I'm looking forward to it. So, again, 8 p.m. Eastern, that'll be on the Washington Gun Laws page. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.